Okay, starting back up again. Let's pray. I just love it the way everybody bows their heads when you say that. No, I really do want to pray. Let's do that, okay? Father, we ask for your goodness to us tonight. Give us a fun time, but also give us understanding of what you have to say to us, especially about our children and about our relationships with each other. Hold us in your hand and bless us as your people. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. Well, y'all came back. I'm surprised. I'm going to do like I did last time. I want to say just a few things, and then we'll open it up to a question and answers. Now, remember, you must have your project going. No, I'm not going to check on it. But I want to encourage. How do we turn this off? We're getting feedback. As I get close to it, we hear all sorts of things. Yeah, just turn it. I talk loudly enough to where there's no need for that in here, I don't think. Go start off tonight. Some of you may have heard me say some of this before. I've done it in some of the talks in the dining hall and everything, but I want you to have it in mind. So let's just think about it, especially in terms of your children. Start off tonight with the fact that you only have four types of power with your child. That's it. And that's all you got. But there's an interesting phenomenon about the power that you have. This is birth. This is 6, 12, 18, and who knows where. This is 0%, and this is 100%. The first kind of power that you have with your child is what I call raw power. You're bigger than it is. And remember, our goal is tonight, number one, have fun. Okay, so if I say something stupid, smile at least, okay? And then number two, we want to try to learn something or interact, and I want y'all all to feel free to do that kind of thing. Okay, but we want to have fun. 100% power. The first kind of power that you got is raw power. You're bigger than it is, and so you can throw it around like you want to. As a matter of fact, at birth, you have 100% raw power. If you don't take care of it, it'll die. That's a lot of power, isn't it? But guess what? Ta-da! 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 That's your raw power that you have over your child. At birth, by 6 years old, it has diminished significantly. Have you ever seen a mama chasing a kid at the department store? And she's trying to catch it. And the faster she runs, the faster it runs. And it climbs under dresses and goes in the closet and does all that kind of stuff. Guess what? Raw power has gone down. See, you can't just... Number one, you can't outrun it. It's quicker and can go places. Who in here would get on your hands and knees and go under the chairs? You know, so you just don't have that much power with it. Raw power descends. I'm going to say what I said last week, though. Daddies continue to have more raw power than mamas do. And they're a cultural phenomenon. I mentioned it last time, but I'm going to say it again. We live in a male chauvinistic culture that has changed tremendously, by the way. I'm old. Y'all don't know what it really is to be in a chauvinistic culture. See? But it's changed a lot, but it's still that way. And remember, shotgun daddies, machine gun mamas. Remember that? Remember that? Mm-hmm. Good.
No,
don't you do that. Don't you do that. No! That's daddy. Okay? So, because of that shotgun mindset of dad, he tends to get more response out of the child. Raw power, 100%, goes down. The second kind of power that you have is intellectual power. You're smarter than it is. It doesn't matter when it is born, so it doesn't matter. So you've got zero power with your intellect, okay? But as soon as it starts understanding vocabulary, words, and what you're saying, mama and daddy know everything. until they bring homework home that you don't know how to do. Then you're dumber than dirt. I'm serious. And they will bring homework home that you don't know how to do. You don't know the new math. You don't know the system that they're using. And you'll say, ask your daddy when he gets home. And daddy will say, why didn't you ask mama? Because neither one knows what to do. See, that's what happens. So intellectual power is sort of zero down here. That sweet little baby doesn't care a whole bunch about, you know, what you know when it's 2 months old. It doesn't give a rip. So, well, you see a pattern going here, don't you? Third kind of power that you have is what I call material power. It wants your stuff. It starts off when you go, they want a cookie. You don't have to say anything. I'll keep doing it until he stops laughing. I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that. Material power. It starts off primarily with foodstuffs. But then after foodstuff, it's whatever, and I keep saying it wants. See, I want y'all to begin to think of them as little buggers as opposed to people, just for a little while, okay? So, material power. Originally, you don't have a whole bunch. It doesn't matter. All it wants is something in its mouth and its bottom chains. And that's really all that really is that we have to take care of. But then it sort of goes like this. And then we get over to here. 12, I keep using 12 because 12 is the two ways of noting the specific importance of ages. The Romans did it based on sevens. The Greeks did it based on sixes. And we are left with a combination of the two. Why is 6 so important, 12 so important, 18 so important, 21 so important? Mixture of 3s and 6s. But anyway, so 12. Onset of puberty somewhere along in here. And I repeat this again. 1890, the average age onset of puberty was 16 and a half years. Today it's somewhere between 10 and 12. The youngest I've ever seen was 8 years old. Can you imagine an 8-year-old female able to reproduce? People ask why. I don't know the why, but I'll give you a guess at it. Because we have better stimulation, better nutrition, better prenatal care, environmental. We got all sorts of stuff going on. The little organism matures earlier and earlier. Physically, it matures emotionally later and later. Okay, so puberty somewhere along in here. Have you ever been to the mall or to a store and you've seen this little guy? Let's say it's January and he's got this bomber jacket on that you know costs at least $400. He's got on a pair of tennis shoes. It used to be Michael Jordan's, but now they've got other ones out that cost, $150 a pair that aren't tied, by the way. The strings are dangling around. A pair of jeans that have been razor cut and rubbed with sandpaper because he wanted to make his own stonewashed jeans. And you happen to know daddy and or mommy and or both make at least 6 figures, if not more. That is a little turkey, an it, that has decided that you're not going to control me with stuff. And if they happen to want what you got, they'll be nice. If they don't want what you got, they won't be nice. But it does like that. We're focusing on this back here. But I'm saying this because this is where you're going. The day will come when stuff won't work. My famous story, true story, that happened in Jackson, Mississippi. Probably at this point, 38 years ago. Mama comes in, son won't do what she says. Brilliant psychologist comes up with an idea. Every time he is disobedient, you're to take one of his albums away from him. And any week in which you collect 5 albums, you're to break one. I thought that was cool. I thought we had leverage out the wazoo. She comes back the next week and says, well, so much for your stupid little idea. I told him this. He went upstairs, got all of his albums and brought them down and put them on the table and said, you might as well have them now. Which was his way of saying, you're not going to control me with stuff. And he meant it. That didn't work. Time out is a variant form of handling stuff. It is a separation of the child from stuff. It is a separation of the child from what you give emotionally. And so that's another one of the components as to why timeout is important. Now, the fourth kind of power, at what age does the child recognize mama's voice? Birth. At what age does a child recognize daddy's voice? Birth or shortly thereafter. Okay? Relational power. So it is up here. And so the relational power does sort of like this. And what we want it to do, I remember the year my daughter Day came home from college. She went to Georgia. Her mom was from Georgia. They're Georgia addicts. She comes back, and after her beginning of her sophomore year, this daughter now is 43 years old, okay? But I remember her coming in, and we had an adult discussion of the Iraq War or something like that, okay? The first time I can remember her relating to me as if I was, well, I won't say dumber than dirt, but something like that, you know? She was a sweet girl. I loved her to death. We got along great. But I just sort of wasn't on the radar. But we had a nice little discussion. She's now back up here. She appreciates her daddy and her mama. We talk with Christy and Day at least once a week. One's in Oklahoma City. One's in Austin, Texas. Davey and Allie here in town. We're back up to being adults to adult. But this is what you got to go through to get there. Now, the reason for doing all this is what we're talking about. Whether you realize it or not, your power is at its maximum point in their lives right now. Isn't that spooky? Imagine this is all you're going to have in terms of power. Well, on the one hand, you know, I'm joking with it. Of course, you're going to have more power. My mama would ask me to take the garbage out. I didn't take my own stupid garbage out. But if mama asked me to, I took her garbage out, okay? Because she's mama. So I'm hoping the mama-daddy come back into play in the future for y'all the way it did for us. I talked with a young lady today who said, when I am old enough, I am leaving this town and I will never come back here again. And I probably will go to Boston. And I want to have my own shop and do my own thing. But I am not going to be back here. Now, what was she saying? That was 2.5 hours ago. She's basically saying, I don't like any of this junk. And I am in a state of rebellion. All of these are down here. And I'm gone. Now, the reason for saying this, it's not that you can utilize or plan for this, because you really can't. I know that. But what I want you to do is, please take seriously that today is the most critical day in your child's life. It's not when they get 10, 12, 18. It is not when they get 6, 7, 8. It is not when they get 4, 5, if they're 2. The most important day that you have with your child is right now today. And if you have them down here, understand that you've got maximum power now. And your power is, at least in certain areas, going to go down. Now, just to read you some passages that support what I'm talking about. In terms of raw power, Proverbs 12:1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. How about that? Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Where in the world has that gone? What does DHS have to say about that? I truly believe that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I also believe that some of the best lessons I ever learned in life came because I feared my daddy. I didn't fear my mama. She's a sweetheart. I had zero fear of her. Little old bitty thing, hold my arm up, she walk under my arm. She was a honey bun. I could go on all night about how sweet my mama was. But I scared of my daddy. Okay, that's just life. Children need to have someone that they really, truly believe is big and strong and powerful. They need to have someone that they really believe they need to be careful around. I was watching the special on the Lions on the, I forget which network it was on, but it was on last week. And the daddy lion will often kill the baby lion if he doesn't like it, if it bothers him. The mother lions never kill their cubs. But it was talking about, the narrator was saying, the daddy lion will roar at them, will tolerate a little bit of messing around, but then he'll just break a neck. They're gone. Hence, the cubs learn early to leave the big old guy with all the hair sticking out alone. And they learn that they can bite mama's tail, and they can nibble on her and do all that kind of stuff. And she's okay with it. And that's exactly the way my home was. My daddy would break my neck. But my mama, I could do all sorts of mess and get away with her. I manipulated the ever-living stew out of my mama. I want y'all to know this. We lived in Memphis, Tennessee during World War II. That was something that happened a long time ago to most of y'all. But during World War II, Daddy worked at a machine shop up there. If I ever did anything wrong and I knew I'd been caught at it, this was my technique. I would go out in the backyard and, shall we say, pull down a switch. Strip it, take it in to Mama, and give it to her. Say, here, Mama, here's a switch. And she'd always say, well, what did you do? And I'd say, well, I did so-and-so. And she'd say, oh, well, thank you so much for telling me, sweetheart. Was I not slick? This was age 2, 3, and 4, by the way. 2, 3, and 4. That's how manipulative I was with my sweet little mama. She was so gentle that she didn't even stop me one time when I tried to stick a screwdriver in an electrical outlet. She didn't know how to say no to me. So I was working on it. My daddy was a machinist. I had to work with tools, too. So I stuck a screwdriver and knocked me across the room. I learned not to mess with electrical outlets, but not because my mama told me, because I stuck a screwdriver in it. Now, today, don't say, well, when they get older, we'll do so-and-so, or when they understand, we'll do so-and-so, or when daddy's home, we'll do so-and-so. Please think in terms of today, right now. Because to be very honest, you don't know whether you got tomorrow or not. We live in a world where our children tend to prosper and thrive. But we do have accidents, and we have to be prepared for that. Okay, so our children tend to thrive. Remember I told you last week it took 2 babies to get one in the 1600s? Something like 50% did not make it to adulthood. That's just the way it was. So use today. You got them today. Let's use today, okay? All right. Now, these were verses having to do with raw power. Here's some having to do with intellectual power. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turn your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. And if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. That's what I want my child to have. I want my child to have knowledge and understanding and wisdom. I want him to make good decisions. My definition, The goal of parenting is to train the child to make decisions in light of consequences in as healthy a manner as possible with consideration for self and others in harmony with my value system. Just to repeat it. Okay, so that is from Proverbs 2, chapter 2, 1 through 11. Material power. Proverbs 10, 22. This is sort of a, well, I'll just throw it out. The blessing of the Lord makes rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. God blesses us with what we have in terms of material stuff. But the passage I like best is from Proverbs 30, 7 and 9. Two things I ask of you, deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of the Lord. That's what I was reared with. My goal is not to be rich, nor is my goal to be poor. But my goal is to pray that God will give me what I need to have to honor him. Because if I get fat and sassy rich, I may not honor God. And if I'm poor, I may do things that dishonor God. That's what I want for your children right there. I want them to relate to material power, stuff that same way. Relational power. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. That's what we want. That's what we want from our parents. We want them modeling that kind of thing for us. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor with a good name in the sight of God and man. That's what I want for my child. That's what I want for my child. All right. That's background. This is the kind of power you got. That's why I'm pushing you to exercise your power now. Let's don't wait till they understand. That's why I tell you, trust that your child has a passive vocabulary far in excess of what you think they have. We never know when they start understanding. We do understand when they develop an active vocabulary, they can interact with us. But don't wait till then. Tell them now. I made a big point last time about not telling them stuff, and I still stand by it. I'm guilty. I stand by it. I do need to clarify, I have no problem with a first-time understanding of what you expect of them in a non-disciplined situation. What I am vehemently opposed to is a gray area negotiation explanation where you can be challenged in what you're saying. That's what I don't want to happen. No explanation. I want you to understand. Do you understand why you did this? Do you understand why you did it? Well, no, because I didn't really do that. Your child loves it. They love it. And they start loving it very, very young. They really do. Now, projects. Anybody in here willing to share a project with us that you had from last week? Uh-oh, I see a nodding head. I'm attuned to that kind of thing.
We're trying to get Ellie to two things. One, sit at the table for an entire meal without getting up and running around. And two, to teach her to pick up her toys in the room.
Two projects. They're brave, aren't they? Imagine a child picking up their toys. I just can't, that just, you know... I understand. I understand. Amazing. Well, how's it going?
Early days.
She's doing good with the sitting down.
Doing good with the sitting down. Okay, now, anybody have any ideas? Because I want y'all to interact. Any ideas for assisting a child to stay at the table? We need to keep Ellie at the table, see? What would be your idea about what should be done? Keeping in mind our kinds of power over here, okay? What?
Strap them in with a belt.
Strap them in with a belt. Is that not what we do when we put them in a high chair, by the way? And the belt's handy in case you need it. Okay, so, yeah, by the way, you don't just strap them in, but you say, you must stay in your seat. Remember one time you tell them? You got to stay in your seat. Okay, and I can just see the throwing of the spoon on the floor. I can see the spitting of food on the floor. I can see the food in the hair. I can see all sorts of stuff going on. All that tends to happen. I'm sorry, but right now we're not worried about any of that stuff. We're worried about staying in your chair at the table. We want to focus on one thing. Kids are pros at running rabbits. We're trying to catch the fox, and they want us to chase rabbits. Don't let them put a rabbit out on you. If the goal is to keep her in the chair, we are successful if she stays in her chair. We'll work on food next, i.e. on the floor.
So just ignore the other behaviors they're doing?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Uh-huh. If they throw the food on the floor, you take the food up and put it away.
Okay.
Just don't let it have where they can get with it. Remember, very
we'll
few...
We'll start like banging on the table, anything to distract from the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from doing what you want them to do.
Sure.
Exactly. Smart little bugger.
They'll do the one thing because they know there's money, so it's just kind of
ignore. Once you get the one thing going,
uh-huh.
Now you come back and put the second one in. Okay, that's why I called this Hell Week, didn't I? Didn't I tell you I was going to be bad? But you get it going. See, you get this one taken care of, and now you put another one in. You put another one in. Your children are very smart. They will catch it in a hurry. I joke about it. They're sweet, precious things. You love them to death. I love mine, too. I love my grandkids. That's not the issue. But we need not to have frantic mommies and daddies. Who is most likely to be physically abusive to a child? The frantic, tired, frustrated parent. Who is most likely to whip too much and bruise a child? The frantic, frustrated, tired parent. Who is most likely to not lose their cool with their child? The parent who feels like he or she, in fact, does have control of the child. What we're trying to do. I don't want any bad stuff happening. I want the good stuff to happen. Okay, we got one project going, sitting at the table. By the way, I had one person one time say, duct tape. It works for everything else. And I can understand. Bad things happen. Yes.
From that, I would say, tell her dinner's over. You know, if when you get up, dinner's over. You
know, no problem with that at all. No problem with that at all.
Yeah, we've done. Yeah. We're not done it in the past. But that's kind of what we're doing right
but
now.
But what does it mean if dinner's over?
Next meal is 12 hours later. Yeah.
And what's the Elkin rule?
She went to bed the other night. Her stomach went.
Very few starve to death. Okay? And remember, my rule is I don't mind them having some milk, but I don't want to give them a full blast bottle of milk. No, I want them to have some, but not a full one. I am really mean. I really am not. But it's amazing if they think you are, how quickly they shape up compared to if they don't.
Food situation with the 13-month-old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're at that age, but okay, he's 13 months.
Yeah.
And he will not eat anything healthy for him unless he's starving, like mm-hmm. a banana or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which ultimately it's my fault because if he doesn't eat the banana, I just go to something else and he's used to that.
Okay. Oh, goldfish or something. Yeah,
right. And that's what I would do just to get him to eat. Okay. So, yeah.
Because we don't want him to forget how to eat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This morning, I was about to
determine. I'm sorry. That was too good. I'm sorry. That was too good to pass up. I didn't catch it.
Okay. This morning, I was bound and determined he was going to eat that banana. An hour and 15 minutes later, he's still in his high chair screaming, and I gave him Cheerios. So what was the wrong thing to do, initially, to even leave him in the high chair, correct? Should I have just gotten him and never fed him until he eats that banana? What?
You asked 14 questions. Now. Yes, 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 no, 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 yes, yes, no.
Just from what you heard, start
okay. First of all, now this is purely me. This is not the standard stuff that you're going to get out of a textbook kind of a deal. Because the way I was reared, okay, my parents, to my knowledge, there may be some, my parents never tried to make me eat anything, period. We are so health conscious, they need to have their fruits, they need to have their veggies, and then they get what they want, you know, and we start so early trying to get that to happen. Personally, I don't want to try to make a child eat anything. But now, that's personal, that's not professional, okay? Having said that, but I believe firmly that what you put in front of them is what they should eat. And I believe that when they get to be 8 years old, too. Dealing with a family yesterday, not from the church, that in the morning there are 5 different breakfasts prepared. There's something wrong with that picture, okay? When my mama put it on the table, and my daddy would sit down and say, boy, if you don't want it, you don't have to eat it. But there ain't no more. And that simple rule is what I live by. So the deal is, put on the table what they want to eat. At 13 months, though, please understand, we have to have a little bit of compassion, a little bit of understanding. You know? So milk or what I give them.
I gave him milk.
Milk and what I give them. Of course, it's going to get you back now. It's going to wake up at 3 o'clock.
So I gave him milk and the banana, and he didn't want the banana. Should I just let him down until lunch?
What do y'all think?
Not do a banana.
Give us some feedback. What do you think about the banana? To be or not to be?
And it's not just a banana. It's any fruit. He won't eat any fruit or any vegetable. Unless
fruit or not to be fruit?
Yes. Okay.
Please.
I have a child who's very picky, and she's old. Of course, she's like, she's 20 months now. Mm-hmm. But at your child's age, she wouldn't any of that either. So I just kind of got to the point where I would just find things that she liked, like little Cheerios. Mm-hmm. But now she eats everything I put in front of her. But I think it's just,
I think some kids
just have stages. Yeah. She wouldn't eat any fruits, any vegetables, nothing. Now she eats anything I put on her plate.
Okay.
We have a success story here. Yes. He just likes black bananas.
And I mean, it's not about the banana. I just want to eat anything decent.
Okay. Two things come to my mind here real quickly. One of which is my wife grew up, there were only two foods that she would eat most of her young life. Almost back to, as far as her memory goes. She would eat rice and peanut butter. That was all she would eat. And that is, you know, that's not a good diet. It's better than some, but it's not a good diet, okay? She still likes peanut butter and bananas, which is weird to me. But anyway, the other thing I want to throw out, children sometimes have a taste sensitivity, and sometimes they have problems with what they put in their mouth. And developmentally, you can't always know exactly what's going on. And so I want to be a little bit cautious. I want to make sure they get food. I want them to have as good a diet as we can get in them. But at the same time, what I don't want is to cater so to what they want. That they believe that if they whine a lot, because what you mainly taught him was that he can cry for an hour and 15
right.
minutes and he'll still get what he wants.
Right.
That's what I don't want, see. Take him down, let him play. You know, when he gets hungry, put it back in front of him. But I want to be sensitive to the fact, in the same way that some children are sensitive to sound. I have a granddaughter right now that went to the Thunder Grizzly game, and my son-in-law anyway, they were at the game and in a box, and Ella was there. And Ella, they sent us a picture of her sitting in the back like this. It was so loud that it bothered her. See, there are sensitivities, and we want to be careful. Please check out everything that you can possibly check. Make sure, you know, like if your child is crying, please check and see if you've got something wrong with your ears. You know, that does happen. And you want to feel guilty. You let a child cry all night, and you find out the next day they got a ruptured eardrum. You're the worst mother in the world. Not really. But see, do make sure that you sort of know what you're talking about. But once everything is okay and you have some degree of assurance, then consistency is what you want to try to use. Okay. There was a second thing that you did about after picking up toys. What do you do about picking up toys? How old is Ellie, by the way?
She's
4 years old. Okay, 4 year old. What about picking up toys? What do y'all think y'all do about that?
Yeah. Personalities, and I think her personality is the type where if you make it a game, she'll
it's done.
Problem
yeah.
Doing it.
And I have.
Not that way.
So. Sometimes you get a $3 bill. There ain't no such thing as a $3 bill, y'all. but you get a child a little bit different. Children at that age, especially, do. I have never. How do I say this? Because as soon as I say it, it won't happen. In terms of baptism of babies, I have never had a child scream and cry. It's just because I'm so warm and loving and good and tender. See? No, it's because, think about it. If you're a baby, do you want to be lying flat like this thinking you're going to fall back, held by this guy with all his black on, and you don't know what's going on, and you're scared about what's going to happen? You turn them up, you hold them, let them sit a little bit, and look at them, talk with them softly, quietly, and evident. Now, if they're screamers, they're going to scream. I understand that. There's some that are going to cry no matter what you do. But use your common sense in dealing with your child, what I'm trying to say. And game playing is a good thing to do. I'm seeing a young man right now, 6 years old, has some trauma in the family. Let's just put it that way. Major trauma in the family. And the only way that I could get him to talk with me about death was today we played soldiers. And his idea, by the way. So we played soldiers. And we went outside, and he got behind the brick piling, and he would shoot at me with his machine gun, and then I would go bing, bang, bang back at him. And he said, what happens when you get shot? He said, well, you die. Well, what happens when you die? He would talk with me in the midst of the game of soldiers that he couldn't and wouldn't otherwise. So, personally, if the game works, do it.
See, I think that situation is more of a problem with me than it is really with her.
Really?
Yeah.
You're just trying to say that before we do. Now, don't get in front of us. No, it's not so much a problem. It's you're using your noodle in dealing with your child. Pull it blind over there. That would be, get that out of y'all's face over there. But just think what's, some children do respond, but if you play games all the time, see, that's my problem, then life is a game, and we have to have a game to do anything. Sometimes, I want your child sometimes to do what you say. Do it because you say it firmly and quickly. If something is about to happen that's very negative and your 18-month-old is about to go in the corner of the yard and you see a snake, I want you to be able to say, no! And they stop. And then they look at you while you're going over there and pick them up and get out of there. See, I want you to be able to protect them. But they have to... When the different tone of voice hits, I want them to know it's a different tone of voice. When we're playing the game, I want them to play the game. Anybody else have a project that you're willing to mention? Hi there, guy. Hi there.
You got kicked out of the nursery.
You got kicked out of the nursery? I want to know who you pinched. Did you pinch somebody? Huh? Oh, hi there. Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to take you. I'm not going to take you. I'm not baptizing. It's okay. Now, yes.
Well,
Makes for a good sex life, doesn't it?
Touche.
They'll calm down in just a minute.
They start off in their bed.
Yeah.
So we're good. But then I wake up at 5 o'clock and put on my bed. At that point, it's 5 o'clock and I'm beginning to be lazy.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing my answer would just be at some point I have to get a book and take it back. Or lock them in the room.
Sounds good to me. I happen to believe that children, again, are very, very smart. They know exactly what they're doing. And they come in like that as soon as you are aware that they're in. And by the way, 4 years old is the one doing it, or the two, mostly? Okay, both. They say, it's after midnight, let's go. Okay. What I would do, they sleep in the same room? See, I grew up sleeping in the same room with my brother. So, you know, not all time does it happen, especially a 2 or 4 year old will wake each other up. I understand all that. So, does one go, literally, does the 4 year old go get the 2 year old, or do they just both come in? Does both come in? 4 year old, a 4 year old is very capable of getting this message, by the way. I want to say. I'm sorry, two's old enough to know the difference, okay? What I would like to ask you to do, I would like to ask you to talk to them both as if they understand every word that you're saying, okay? Let's keep our little rules going here. You say, from now on, guys, if you get up and get out of your bed and come into the room where we are, I'm going to put you back in your room and close your door. Kids tend not like to have their door closed. And if you come out again, I'm going to lock your door. Now, I've done that, probably 24 times with kids that parents have had troubles dealing with. Okay? I've never had it not work. Now, I know the argument is we're going to traumatize the child. And the child is going to be neurotic. They're going to probably become obsessive compulsive, and they're going to count light switches being turned in off, and they're going to poop in their diaper till they're 8 years old. And so we're going to create all sorts of major problems for that poor child. I understand that that's a possibility, okay? I never had it happen yet, but I know it's a possibility. I have had this work time and time and time again. Now, famous story that some of you heard, I'm going to repeat, okay? Nurse mama, 3 children, work late, come in, baby daughter come climb, get in bed, wet bed. Okay, mama would get mad, whip baby, put it back in bed, baby would cry, baby would come back and get in bed. Night would go on. Now that was the pattern that they were in. Okay, I told them to do this. Just like I told y'all. And so she came back and said, the first night she came in, I got up and told her, put her back in her room. She came out, opened the door, and I locked the door. She spent the night sleeping with her nose stuck under the door. Fortunately, she had a long nose. She didn't come out the next night. I wonder why. See? Now, I want the child's bedroom to be the safest, warmest, happiest room in the whole house. So we typically never use the bedroom for punishment. Plus the fact it's like sending them to heaven for punishment. They got their blanket, they got their dolly, they got their toys, they got their truck, they got their everything in there. That ain't punishment. But in terms of sleep, that's where they're supposed to sleep. Another rule that I have for criers and whiners, I'm jumping off into something else. We had whining come up. If the child whines at bedtime, they don't like going to bed, they don't like what's happening, same thing. You may whine all you want to, but you have to go in your room to whine. You may have your blanket, you may have whatever you want, but you can only do it in your bedroom. And if you come out, we close the door. I love you, sweetheart. I'll be so happy when you get all your whining over with. Yeah, I'm a little sarcastic sometimes. But I've never had it not work. Now, the first night is going to be the problem. And it probably means that y'all aren't going to get much sleep. Because there's going to be whining and crying, and then you're going to feel tortured. That guy's crazy. How in the world do we put up with this? And what do? And I have had parents actually create a Dutch door. You know what a Dutch door is? You cut it right at the middle, put four hinges, two bottom and two top, so you can open the, close the bottom and open the top. So you can look in and see how it's doing. Now, you don't need to do that if you feel secure enough. If you feel insecure enough and don't feel like you can do this, that you don't want to close them in, then put a Dutch door up. And a Dutch door can be made fairly easily, one that will last for a while. Anyway, you take the door you got and cut it if you got a skill saw. You have to put another hinge or two on. You can use the two, usually three, but anyway, it can work. Point being that I would like to ask you to try. Well, what in the world have you not locked the door before if you're not bothered with it? Oh, what's your name over there? What's that? See, and I understand that. I understand that some people don't feel like they can. Yes. There we go.
We didn't want to turn the door handle.
Gotcha. That's why I say the first time you say stay in your bed or close the door, the second time lock the door. Yeah. Same thing. Probably going to be a preacher. Sometimes to have a good model lesson there in front of everybody is sort of good, isn't it? That's why we sometimes witness executions. We just had it this week here in Mississippi. We're executing a bunch of people. No. Yes. You'd like a project.
I would like to have a project. I have a problem with children. We have a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. They interrupt. They ask for... Well, I like to know what to do about interrupting, asking repeatedly. And also, my main issue is I homeschool, so I'm with them all day and all night.
You don't have white hair yet. Yeah, Wilson, yeah. They'll drive you crazy.
What's that?
They'll drive you crazy.
They will.
Yeah.
In the afternoons, normally around 4 o'clock, I start to cook. We live in a small house. I try to tell them to stay out of the kitchen. They come in the kitchen and ask me stuff. I get mad, and I find naughty cheer and all that. I don't think it's a healthy system. Do you have any advice about what to do with the approaching 5 o'clock hour, cooking and being in a small house?
It's the bewitching hour. You don't have a half bath.
No.
Okay. I am going to get run out of the room with what I'm about to say. I am going to be accused of mental emotional cruelty. Charges have already been filed, so don't bother doing it, okay? You go to Cowboy Maloney's and you get a refrigerator crate carton. And you get a big old knife, and you cut it off right about this high, all the way around. Okay? And you duct tape across the top, so if they grab the top, they won't cut themselves. And you put the little bugger that's giving you problems in the box. You push it into the corner in the dining room, put a chair against it. They can't see out. They can hear what's going on, but they can't see whether they have attention or not. And you put them in there. That's your timeout box. And you put them in there. And the one end, the smaller one, the older, you know, the older ones, you'll have to find a little bit something different. But anyway, with the younger ones, that'll work. Yeah.
Can I clean out a closet?
Oh, I love closets. If you got a closet to clean out, let's do it. Seriously. Remember, I told y'all the story last week about little Billy. For those of you who weren't here, I worked for a year at Lake Avenue Congregational Church in Pasadena with their 1 to 2 year old nursery, trying to set up a program to handle the kids. And we used a timeout room, a closet. It was big enough to get a bed in. That one was, but see, that was for the whole 30 kids, 1 to 2. So I have no problem. Leave the light on. If you have to pipe air in, pipe some in. I think y'all ought to be getting the message by now that the main thing I want is for your child to respect you, to realize that you have power and that you can do what needs to be done, and we're going to do it. Now, to get back to a project, the box, I've had parents from California to Tennessee to Mississippi use the box. A 7-year-old, it depends on size, age. Can he turn the box over? The closet may be necessary for a 7-year-old, see? But I have used it for a 7-year-old, yeah. If it's a fairly small child, not too tall, yeah.
How young can you start?
Just don't put a label on the box and send them away. That's the only thing, okay? The youngest in this timeout that I'm talking about right now, mentioned last week, I did it with little Billy was 18 months old. See, it was a 1 to 2 year old nursery. And so 1 to 2 year old, 12 months to 24 months, and he was 18 right in the middle. And we had him down on the floor literally in 2 weeks because he gets the message when you do it consistently. Please understand that techniques vary. Things come and go. My parents never heard a psychologist talk about a stupid thing in the whole wide world, okay? Nor did my grandparents. So, you know, it's okay. Use your common sense to come up with what will work in your home with your child. But the key thing is that you be the parent. Why do we have such a problem in today's world with our young people? And I mean junior high through college. We tend to have a problem because they don't respect authority and they don't feel a sense of responsibility. Why do they not have a sense of responsibility and why do they not respect authority? Because nothing ever really has happened to them. Whatsoever a man soweth, and you know the rest. If we're going to live out our biblical principles, we need to see that our children understand there is a consequence to behavior. And my consequence may not be the best one. That's why I always want y'all to help. Y'all may come up with something far better than I'm proposing. But my major goal is I want you to understand you have power to have your children do. Now, back here, you've got power to have your children do what you need to do. When they get up to 16, 17, we got a different package. There are laws against child abuse. There are no laws against parental abuse. Now, I'm not saying no laws. If they hurt you, they're going to be in trouble. I understand that. But there are specific laws against child abuse. There are none against parental abuse. When the child is 12. See? And I'm telling you, 17-year-old girl, ties in with this, would not obey her mama. Parents were divorced. The daughter said, I'm living till 18, and when I'm 18... I will go and do what I want. That little like this, like to knock the snot out of her, you know. Little, I started saying another word, snippy little thing, you know. So I talked her mother into calling the police. They lived in Germantown, Tennessee. I happened to know the judge that she would be taken before. I called up the judge and explained the situation. The judge had her appear when they police picked her up, took her in, and the judge said, "Young lady, whether you know it or not, you now belong to me. You're hitting 18 does not matter if you are a ward of the court until I decree." She happened to want to go to Middle Tennessee. Why in the world, I don't know. But one day, and there's nothing wrong with that school. That's a good school. But she just sort of, I think she was just picking one out that was over there somewhere. She wanted to go to Middle Tennessee State. He says, "You're not leaving the city limits unless I give permission." Suddenly, she shaped up. And suddenly, she started doing what Mama said. "I don't want your kids to have to get to 17 and a half and have something like that happen. And by the way, our kids are not immune from that because we go to First Pres. Because we hear the gospel preached does not mean immunity to what I'm talking about. Our kids can be as snippy and snotty as anybody going. I don't think they should be, but I know they are." So that's sort of the background of why I'm so concerned about you getting power now. Whatever you come up with, it doesn't have to be my thing. What would you like to have as a project? What would y'all like to do as a project? Which one do you want to pick on first?
Our hard-headed 7-year-old.
What does the hard-headed 7-year-old mainly do?
Conspire.
Incite the troops to riot. Okay, well, rules and principles, I said it last week, I'm going to say it again. If you see what happened, consequent the one that you should get on to, okay? If you don't see what happens, punish them all. The value of that is at least you then know you got the guilty one. And there's a purpose for that. Because you see, if you don't get the guilty one, they will conspire and manipulate to get you to get the other one if they're mad at them. So they start playing you to become the punisher or the enforcer of what's going on. That's one rule. The other rule is, let's get our timeout place, whatever it takes, if it's a closet, whatever it is. Let's get a timeout place, and I want that 7-year-old to know. It's a he or she?
She.
I want her to know that if she sticks her nose in the wrong place at the wrong time, she goes in timeout. And remember, I told you last week, we don't spend tons of time explaining to her why she's going. If she wishes to respectfully ask afterwards, take all the time in the world to explain. "Sweetie, this is what happened. You did this and did." "I didn't." You put her right back in timeout. I want her to know that you are going to do something to her that she is not going to like. It's not going to threaten her life. I don't think she's going to be warped by it. But she is going to come to understand that when she does something disrespectful, pick out 1, 2, 3 things that you're going to have as your focus. If she does something disrespectful to you in particular, you be on her like white on rice, not with a mouth, taking her to timeout, closing the door. Timeout doesn't start, I'll repeat myself, until the child is quiet. And roughly 1 minute per year of life, ballpark. So this is what you're going to be doing. Lay it out there. Let that be your project. Come up with what you want. What is it that she's doing that you really don't like? Yes?
I'm a teacher, and usually there's kind of two sides to those things, because on the one hand, if kids are acting up in the classroom, I've got to respond to it. You like you're saying the white on rice. But the other hand, I've got to disappear. I can discipline the class before it ever happens by having something to do and keeping them busy.
Yeah.
In a situation like that, it seems like if you had a chore for them or some schoolwork or something like that that they do during that time slot of the day where they have something that they have to be doing.
So they don't have idle time.
Then that's that kind of a preventative.
Which is too much. Never before. I mean,
Well, people give her stuff, I take it away.
Good for you.
I haven't thrown it away yet, because I feel like she can earn it back.
Sure, I got no problem with that at all.
She's on the verge of like, I'm
just
going to
throw it away.
See, you're into a raw power play, is what you're saying. And she wins most of the time. Y'all got a suggestion for a raw power play where she wins?
We had John Cox talking to us.
Yeah.
He says, take yourself out of the situation. Listen, you got two choices. You can do A or you can do B. It's your choice. You're going to suffer the consequences. It's not up to me. It's your choice. So you can do it or not do it, and whatever your consequences are.
Sure. Put them in solitary, so to speak.
Yeah. You don't have the fellowship of anybody else watching you or whatever it is. It's about that. Take food away from them. It's not a big deal for us. But if they don't feed them, they eat the box.
I want to say this. See, this is why you want to be careful about going to spanking too quickly with a child like this. Because there are some children who will, they learn they can outlast you. They can take more than you can give. And I mean that literally. They will take the punishment, the spanking that you have to offer longer than you can give it. Spank is no big deal. Which is why the time out thing, if done consistently and done, the purpose of time out is total, complete, true isolation. Back to you saying, all kids want to have access to others. And if it is firm enough and consistent enough, and you don't engage in debate with her about it, and assume that when the timeout is up, she has paid her penalty. She doesn't still owe you, see? Because if you demand an apology of her and she doesn't apologize, you've lost. If you demand she apologize to her brother or sister, then you've lost. And by the way, my argument against that is I do not want to train my child to lie. And I'm training my child to lie when I require them to apologize when they don't really want to apologize. One of those spankings I got from my daddy, only got six, was I was playing with a pair of tweezers and my twin first cousin, y'all don't know what that is, but if you're in a large family, we were born the same day. My twin first cousin ran over and fell into the tweezers and started crying. On the arm. It was no big deal. She's been wimpy. But anyway, my daddy said, apologize to her. I said, I didn't do anything. I was just sitting here. He said, apologize to her. And I said, I didn't do anything. He proceeded to start spanking me. I think on the third spanking, I broke. See? He made me. I wasn't apologizing to her. I was mouthing words to keep from being hit. That's what you got to just use your common sense to have in mind. See, I don't want to train my child. If you don't do it my way, so go ahead and do it my way, whether you mean it or not. That's what I don't want. But if you win the timeout battle, it's going to be my way. And when you walk out, you say, you can come out now. Any sarcasm, any abruptness, any disrespect, march her little hiney right back in. It will take all of your time for about 1 to 2 weeks. But if that doesn't work, then we have to get our cattle prod. I'm joking. Sometimes it's impossible. to ignore. Set the situation up where she can't outlast you. I can walk around the whole house. I can watch TV. I can eat supper. I can do anything while she's sitting in a 3x5. I can go on with life a lot longer than she can sit there in that room. It's a battle of wills. I don't want to break her will. That's not my point. But I want her to know that me, Tarzan, you, Jane, kind of a thing, you know? Me parent, you kid. Me win, you lose. And the sooner you get that, the less of this stuff up here you run into. I'd much rather have that kind of a confrontation now with a 7-year-old than a 14-year-old. And I'd much rather have it with a 14-year-old than a 21-year-old who ain't going to come home. See, that's why I'm making my push. Use now while you've got the power now. Use what you've got. And try to correct if you have some kind of a problem.
When or should you intervene if we have a 5-4-1? If the 4- and 5-year-old are, you know, fighting and bickering and, you know, whatever it might be, fighting over a certain thing, at what point, if you're kind of on the side, do you intervene, or do you just let them hash it out as siblings, or do you immediately say, both of you, I've done both, I've tried to ignore it and let them work it out, and I've also try to step in and say, okay, both of you go to timeout.
Okay, first of all, you don't tell them to go to timeout. Don't use the word. See, you're making them exercise punishment on themselves. They still have some control over what's about to happen. You go over, take both by the hand. Put one in one timeout, one in another timeout. One in one room, one in another room. Yes, you do both. Because you never know who started it. You never know who the really guilty one is. One's guilty and one's guilty. And you never know which one's which.
But should you just kind of let them eventually work it out until one of them gets hurt or screams louder? And then take them both to come out?
What I would like for you to do is say, boys, girls.
One boy, one girl.
One boy, 5 and 4, boy and girl.
Boy and then girl.
Okay, boy and then girl. See, what I would want you to do is sit them both down and say, from now on, we're going to be doing things differently around here. Anytime y'all start picking on each other, this is what's going to happen. You're both going to go to timeout. I don't care who started it. I don't care who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. You both are going to go. It's your call. Okay, the next time it happens, say, okay, don't call to them to come out. That means they're in control of coming out of timeout. You open the door and say, you may come out now. Why did you do that? That's what they typically say. Back in, close the door. Then go to the oven and say, you may come out now. By the way, when both have been put in timeout, there's nothing worse than having one get out and the other one not.
Well, that was because it's been to you. I mean, does the 5-year-old stay 5 minutes and the 4-year-old stay 4 minutes, or do you both?
I would split the difference, say 4.5 apiece, if they're going at each other that close to each other. I'd want the punishment to be, hey, they're so close, 5-4.
Okay, so my other thing with the timeout, like my 5-year-old is not one that yells out or, you know, they don't throw fits when I take them to timeout. So I don't feel like I'm getting that screaming like, oh, this is just terrible. He just kind of, he's like, oh. So he goes and he sits. And so I've been kind of putting him in a corner of our sunroom.
They need to be isolated. Yeah, he can watch the birds. He can watch the squirrel jumping from limb to limb. He can watch worms on the ground. He can have a great time in there. That's not punitive. I want him to sit there and go, that's all I got to play with. Okay, everybody has to go get their parent, their kids, and we're already talking. Let's close with a quick prayer, okay? Lord, we ask your blessing on our children and bless us as parents. We want to honor you, serve you, and rear our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Sure.